the morning. Saturday, May the 22nd, 2021. It's 8:35 a.m. Yeah. Yeah, yesterday was a weird day. I posted the file. Well, I made the blog post. The screen that I had open in my window showed the audio file was there and verified and published. And I started getting emails and notices that there was no audio. And, well, it's like, oh, it's not, of course the audio is there. And of course the audio wasn't there. For some reason, PodPress decided that between the point where it verified that the file was there, the URL was valid, and the point where the publish finally registered, it takes a lot of clicks to get it to publish, it erased the file, and I have no idea why. I did get it fixed. There's a lesson there, and the lesson is, if somebody says the file isn't there, go to look and see if the file is there. So anyway, the 8 o'clock alarm went off, and I got my stuff together, finished writing what I was writing, and put on my boots. So here I am. It's rather a lovely spring morning. It's 50, it's barely 50. It was 52, I think, when I left the house. Maybe up to 54 by now. The sun is burning through the clouds a little bit. There's still a lot of cloud around. But there's a lot of blue sky as well. It's still mostly cloud, but it's a pretty day. It's a pretty morning. The book is coming. I'm going to go over 300,000 words today. Yesterday was 299,000. So it's going to go over 300,000 words today. The website, For the Words website, is beginning to choke a little bit on the file size for this one particular project. It's being slow to load. I assume it's a website. It may not actually be the website. It may be our network connection. It could be something not related. But yeah, that's a big file. This morning's soundtrack was In Excess. Oingo Boingo. Lots of strong beat. I find myself listening to music a little more, I won't say critically, but a little more depth. The other day, it wasn't yesterday, it was the day before, sometime in the late afternoon, evening, my time. Chris Brogan had a link to a documentary about somebody I'd never heard of before. I want to say P. Dilly, but I think it's J. Dilly. And it was really interesting. It was 30-something minutes long. It had a lot to say about why Mr. Dilly's sampling computer, MPC-3000, was in a museum. And it was because he's one of the people in the early hip-hop days who was kind of a rebel in terms of how he constructed his music, how he used that digital device with its 16 little keys on it to mix, match, and combine samples to edit the actual samples, to do things like take out the highs, take out the lows, stretch them out, emphasize one syllable in a word. And it was fascinating. It was fascinating. Because the people who were talking about the process that he used were able to demonstrate exactly what it was they were talking about by showing on the screen where the beats fell as opposed to where the measures fell. I'm not much of a musician. I used to play drums. Well, my sense of timing was actually pretty good. But it doesn't matter how good it is, people aren't metronomes. You can train to be close to metronomic, but people aren't metronomes. And so one of the complaints about drum machines, for example, is that, yeah, drum machines keep an even beat, but it's not a real beat. And I noticed it on, you know, as I listened to the metronome when I was using the metronome to judge how fast I was walking, you know, 120 beats a minute, one every 2 seconds. It's, on a metronome, it's exactly one every 30 seconds, one every half a second, exactly. But then you do something like change it to 121. And it's like, okay, how do you walk to 121? Well, you walk on the beat. Whenever there's a beat, you want to have your heel hit, or you want to lift your foot up, or however it is that you mark that beat. But the reality of the beat is a fractional point in time where a step is more. Do I measure the step from when my heel hits the ground, when my foot is flat on the ground, when my toe leaves the ground? I don't know. Do you? What do you do? Typically, I think we march on the beat. We stomp, put our heel down on the beat. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. But he, J. Dilly, and I apologize if it's really P. Dilly, I don't know. We're pretty sure it's J. Dilly. Because I kept wanting to call him P. Dilly when I looked it up. I was surprised because it was something else. So, J. Dilly. Anyway, I'm fixating on this one little detail. Dilly, I'll just call him Dilly. So when Dilly hit his keypad for, and the one that the example they used was a kick drum, which is in a drum set. The kick drum is the bass drum. It's called a kick because the drummer uses his foot to press a pedal, which pushes the drumstick into the drum. And the trick to playing a kick is that you sort of have to really just like kick it, because if you press and hold, then the drum, the little padded drumstick, holds against the drum head, so it doesn't sound, you don't get a good solid thump, you get a hmm, and the drum head doesn't have a chance to vibrate. And sometimes that's what you want the hmm, hmm, You don't want the thump, 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 thump. You just want the But they had examples of Dilly's work and showed that the kick drum didn't land on the even beat. It didn't always hit on the even beat. There was a fractional syncopation to it. And the reason that's significant has to do with the fact that that's not how music was done then. There's a thing called quantizing, where you could take all of those uneven beats and line them up properly. Properly being so that they fell on each stroke of the measure as it was supposed to. And you can't see the air quotes around supposed, but okay, that's interesting. Coming up on it, get ready, sit with me. Monk post. But Dilly had this idea that no, quantizing was auto-tuning for drums. And he wasn't gonna go there. It wasn't his thing. It wasn't what he wanted to do. He wanted the beats where he put them, not where somebody said they should be. And there's near the end of it, there's a passage where one of the musicologists said he wasn't afraid to do something and have it fail. He wanted to do it to see if it would work. If it worked, fine. If it didn't work, fine. He'd move on to the next one. And that's sort of, if you look at my tree stream, I replied to Chris Brogan about it a couple of times. It's like, I needed to hear that the other night. I think that's why I got up yesterday morning. Yesterday was supposed to be a day off. I was going to say, no, screw it. I'm tired. I'm beat. I'm not going to. So I went into the day clean. I went into the day. It's like, okay, I'm not going to do anything today. I'm not going to do anything I don't want it today. So I proceeded to do the things that I wanted to do, which was I post a daily writing prompt to the ConvertKit Writers Mastermind group. And somehow that has fallen to be me 6 out of the 7 days. The only day I don't have to do that is Monday when Ken Preston does it. So thinking I was going to take yesterday off, the night before I went through and constructed the morning prompt. So when I got up in the morning yesterday, all I had to do was hit the prompt. Hit publish and it went to post and that was it. And then I thought, okay, well, it's 6 a.m. What do you want to do today? And the more I thought about Dilly and thought about, okay, no, it's not, forget quantizing. And I think one of the problems that I'm having with this book is that it feels sloggy. It feels like I'm writing a boring book. Oh, I'm walking past the, I'm walking past the Alex again. Sorry. Not sorry. And part of it is I think what I'm trying to do is force the book to be something that isn't right. It's the whole reason I started writing this, all of it, any of it, was that I wanted to write a different kind of story. And I think I'm looking at this new Ishmael series through the lens of a standard kind of book where things happen, where stuff blows up, where there's action and catastrophe and setbacks and goals. And Ishmael's goal has always been stay employed. And right now he's facing a problem of it. He doesn't have to worry about having a job ever again the rest of his life, so what does he do? And he's sort of floundering. And so this whole series is going to be him kind of floundering to say, okay, what do you do when you reach your goal? What do you do if the thing that you said that you wanted that was more than you ever expected could happen? What do you do when your dream comes true? Where do you go from there? So I think that's really the theme of this story. I think it's really what people want for him. I think that's what I want for him. I want to explore this idea of what do you do when your dream comes true? Forget what people want for him. What people want for him was to be hooked up with Greta years ago. It wasn't a story I wanted to write. Now I've got a story I want to write. Now I've got some ideas about how I think he's going to have to deal with the reality of having his dream come true. Morning. So that was on my mind yesterday morning, and I got through the words. It took all morning, but I managed to get through them. It was only 2 hours of actual writing time. ConvertKit continues to be a distraction. It may be a distraction I have to cut off, because it's just the thing about using a tool like ConvertKit is that people use it figuring they don't need to do anything. They don't need to know anything. They don't need to have a clue as to what it is they're actually doing versus what it is that they think they're doing. They see that what they think they're doing and what they're actually doing is exactly in sync. So that what they're actually doing is what they're doing. Of course it is. It must be because they're doing it. Except the problem, as soon as you use an automated system, you have to do what the system wants you to do, and you have to do it in the order the system wants you to do it, and you have to use the tools for it. And so a lot of people get on and then can't find their way to the tools because the tool link is below the fold when you hit the login screen. You don't see it. That's something I have brought to the management's attention. I don't know if they fixed it yet, but I had one of those yesterday. There's another one where, well, I'm trying to copy a Word document and it has formatting and pictures in it, but when I paste it in, none of the pictures are there and there's no formatting. It's like, yeah, so how do I do it and keep the formatting? It's like, I don't think you can. I think what you have to do is paste it in and then, okay, this is a header, format it as a header. This is bold, format it as bold. And pick a paragraph and import your picture into the system so that the system knows what it is and it's not relying on something that's on your computer. And they're like, well, no, that doesn't work. It does. I do it every month. But they're, it's like, no, I want it to look the way it is on my screen. And I say, well, That's going to be a problem anyway, because not everybody is going to look at it on your screen. I ran into that with an author who was trying to format her ebooks. I wanted her ebooks to look the same way, regardless. And ebooks are basically HTML. They're basically website web pages with a dedicated browser. And she was really upset because she couldn't make her ebooks look like a paperback book. I couldn't use the fonts, couldn't use... Oh, boy. I was like, well, no. Now, you can set the fonts all you like, but the user ultimately has their choice of what font from their machine that they get to use. It's the same with web pages. When I realized that... It's like, do some basic formatting, do some things that make the pieces show up correctly in the right sequence, and then let the user pick what it looks like. At any rate, I am back. I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day. With any luck at all, when the alarm rings, I'll go out. Talk to you then.